Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
Welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For a radio audience tuning in at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com, we're glad that you all can be with us. Also, tuning in to our online affiliates around the world via our podcast. That you all could be with us as well. For anyone who's ever had a dream, who's ever had difficult circumstances to overcome, I think our next guest in his book is going to really touch and inspire you. We're excited to welcome Tom Seaman to our broadcast today. Tom is the author of the book, Animals I Want to See, a memoir of growing up in the projects and defying the odds. I want to talk to Tom not only about the reflection on his life, but what it's been like for him to chronicle it in the book, and to be able to see the way that people are responding to it. If you all are just now finding out about Animals I Want to See, I'll let you know how to get your own copy of it as well. Tom, thank you again for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Cyrus. I'm glad to be here.
Well, the pleasure is definitely all mine. One of the things you talk about in the book as your story unfolds for us in Animals I Want to See, Tom, is time and how time kind of provides perspective, but also, of course, helps us to be able to see things in a different way. What has that been like for you to kind of reflect on this journey and to think about how you've been able to get to where you are today?
I mean, one of the things I would say is writing the book made me a kinder person, because when I looked back, I always knew that kind acts had been done for me both in the neighborhood and outside of the neighborhood. But when you write them all down in a book and they appear on the page, you see the vast number of small kindnesses that were done. I would say that my life is sort of a collection of small kindnesses that add up to my life, you know, that have helped me along the way to change things. And the book goes into some of those, obviously, along the way. So looking back, I would say that. And the second thing I would say is there was some therapeutic element to it as far as my relationship with my siblings and my mother and my family and friends. You know, you tend to dig in deep when you're writing a book like this. And so it definitely revealed some new truths to me.
Yeah. I think you also, and it's interesting for me, Tom, you know, we've had a lot of conversations over the years on this program about, especially when I'm speaking to someone about their life or about events that they were involved in, about the truth and how, you know, I have had some guests who have said some interesting things to me, and one that has always stood out to me is that sometimes there, you know, there seems to be a thing that's too much truth. There's one thing, the reason why I bring this up in chapter 14 of the book is you were being caught after taking some candy. You were basically invited to tell the truth, and you did, and what was said to you was, "That sounds like the truth to me." I want to talk about that and the power of the truth for you, because it whether we're talking about your own personal experiences, Tom, or talking about that with your parents or those around you, it seemed to be these layers that kind of are able to unfold to really kind of reveal the importance of truth and being true. What was that like for you to look at? The idea of not only the power of the truth, but also how liberating the truth can be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there were some episodes in the book when I was starting to think about writing this book, you know, should I put that in there or not? Does it show me in a certain light? And there's also just this process when you're writing a book of deciding what goes in and what goes out, what continues the theme of the book and what doesn't, and cutting out things that don't. But yeah, so, you know, telling the truth about how things really were was one of my, I think, strongest disciplines in this book. And I really wanted to show how it was, but also to show, you know, it's not a sad book, right? It's not a book that just drags you down with all these bad things. You know, the listeners don't know yet, but I was raised in a family of 14 in the projects in Toledo, Ohio, on welfare, food stamps. And I had a very, very difficult father and some things that happened in the neighborhood that aren't great. But mostly the book is a book about a positive outcome, that's for sure, but also just along the way. You know, I thought I had a happy childhood. I looked at the world with wonder every day, and I think that is one of the things that carried me through.
Yeah, and I think that is so inspiring. When you were talking just now, Tom, I thought about another incident that you wrote about in the book, and that is going up on the elevator in the shop. I want to talk about that feeling, because in reading it, you know, I think a lot of us, especially as we kind of reflect on even ourselves as adults sometimes, what that feels like to kind of look down on things and to be able to think of ourselves as, you know, being in a place of greatness and feeling like, you know, we are in a place of, you know, of
right.
power, basically. Talk to us about that incident. Why do you think that stood out to you about the elevator and being able to look down and see the world differently?
Yeah, so my uncles had a shop where they made elevator parts. There's some elevator business in Toledo for whatever reason. And they had this shop out in the country behind their house. And they had this huge elevator outside of the shop where they would load large metal parts on trucks whenever they had something to load. And the elevator had no sides or anything on it. It was just this old metal flat, you know, metal thing that you would stand on and you would hit the button and it would go up and you would be completely free, right? And it would lift quite high. I mean, it was ridiculously dangerous that they would let us kids do that, but the world was different then, you know? And so we would go up on this elevator and it would be this incredible freeing feeling with the wind blowing and with you looking out. And it was the first thing we did whenever we, on the rare occasions that we went out to my uncle's house to see them, you know, we would get on this elevator and all the siblings would want to press the button and we'd all get really excited. So yeah, it was like a lifting, freeing thing, a carefree thing, one of those childhood things, you know?
Yeah, I think so many can relate to that. Let's go to the why, if you don't mind, Tom. You were briefly just sharing with our audience about some of your beginnings, but why did you feel like now was the time you wanted to share your story and to show your life on the other side of some of what you've gone through?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the people wrote something about the book that said, you know, this is a book that we need now, you know, with all the negatives in the world. It's a very positive, uplifting book. I'd say the reason it happened now is more that I've just been very busy with my career and I've had this idea over the years of writing it. And when I tell the story to people now in my life, because I live a more successful life now, they would never guess that the backstory was that this guy grew up in this giant family in the projects in Toledo in this rough neighborhood. So people are always extremely interested in the story when I would tell it. So I thought, oh, I have something here. And then I was fortunate enough to meet Bill Clinton a few times, and Bill Clinton was at an event focused on my story. He just loved me telling the story to him. He's famous for being able to focus on the individual he's speaking with, and he was definitely doing that to me. And he said, you have to write this story. You have to write this as a book. So that sort of pushed me over the edge, and I did it. And I went back to him when I wrote it, and I said, you know, President Clinton, I've written that book. If you remember, can you provide me some support? And so he gave me a blurb for the book, which now appears on the book. So I would say that's what pushed me over the edge. But I do think the timing is good. You know, it's an uplifting story. It's a positive story in a time when there seems to be a lot of bad news.
Were you able to, as you were writing the book, Tom, I was curious about this, as you did kind of reflect backwards, again, as you mentioned, having had, you know, success now and definitely being in a different place in your life and in a lot of different ways, did you find yourself with the ability to give yourself a pat on the back for getting to where you are? Because I think a lot of times when we are living life and kind of thinking, we don't really take the time to think about what we've been able to do and how we got to where we are. Were you able to do that in writing it?
Yes, I would say, you know, I definitely live my life every day with gratitude. I don't, like, go through life not thinking back to that and remembering that. You know, my family, you know, 12 kids, two parents, my father's deceased, but my mother's still alive at 92. We still get together every year for Thanksgiving. All of us, last Thanksgiving, we had 65 with all the children and everything. And so we're still in touch with that, right? Four of my siblings still live in Toledo. We've had various socioeconomic outcomes. So we have exposure to these things, and we always tell the stories when we're together. So very in touch with the past and very grateful for what I had both as a child and what I have now. So yes, the pat on the back, another element of that maybe is in the book I say, you know, at some point when I achieve a certain level of success, I think by going to Yale and then Harvard, that I was really happy that the people that had bet on me, that had supported me, that had done acts of kindness for me, sort of had a payoff. And, you know, it sort of would have been okay if there wasn't a payoff, But I was really pleased that, yeah, you know, these people that did these things for me, they can now see it really made a difference.
Yeah. I think the other thing to the other side of that I want to ask you about, Tom, is the idea of what success looks like. Because even at times when you may not have had much in the form of material things, being able to think about what you did have, how's that kind of shaped how you see success and how you see your own success?
Yeah, I think the definition of everybody's definition of success can be different. You know, one thing that happens when you're in the projects is, you know, money is on your mind at all times. I can only imagine if it was on my mind how it was for my mother, who is a prominent figure in the book and is a wonderful person, which I hope we'll talk about. But, you know, so achieving financial success was a big thing for me, and anybody in those circumstances it is. So I think my definition of success involved that. It involved, at one point, a funny point in the book, I go with my friends and we see the movie The Towering Inferno. Not a great movie, but one that inspired me to say, hey, what are all those people doing in that beautiful glass tower in, you know, in that city? I think I want to work like that one day, you know. So various strange aspirations of success. But when I was a boy, my greatest aspirations were to be one of three things. Either the heavyweight champion of the world like Muhammad Ali, because Muhammad Ali was a very prominent figure when I was young, and he was someone who I found very attractive in that not only was he very successful in the champion, but he was also, you know, he had this very cool way of speaking, and he was controversial in my neighborhood because I grew up in a primarily black neighborhood, even though I'm white, but I went to school in a neighboring neighborhood that was primarily white. And the difference in how people talked about Muhammad Ali was very surprising and shocking to me. You know, with one group, he was a hero. With the other group, they would come into class and say maybe what their father had said at home, like he doesn't deserve to be champion if he won't fight for his country. Because if you remember, he lost his title over refusing to go to Vietnam. So that was one of my aspirations. The other was to be president of the United States or to be the richest man in the world. And there's the money aspect, right? That's obviously a young boy's aspirations that are kind of foolish. I wasn't even a boxer, and I was going to somehow be a boxer. But those were my views of success, at least as a child.
It's such an interesting thing. And I think, too, as you were talking, I thought about another thing that really stood out to me in the book. And that is what I hope our audience really remembers, too, Tom. And that is the importance of being willing to move forward, to let go, and to not to let things that can be harmful weigh us down. You chronicle an experience that happened between your father and you in the book, and when our audience is able to read Animals I Want to See for Themselves, they'll know what I'm talking about. But in talking about your feelings about that experience and after confronting your dad, you talked about the emotion there. And I want to read a bit of that and then talk to you about it and see how this has kind of helped you also in living that freer life that you're talking about. You write this in the book. I was grieving a pivotal loss of hope that my father could ever be someone trustworthy or fair, that he could ever be a true father, and I began to hate him for it. But soon I let that go too. As I walked the streets thinking about it all, I realized that my hatred for my father served absolutely no purpose other than to eat away at my happiness. I want to talk about that because that is a big thing. And for so many people, yeah. Tom, as you know, it is what keeps us stuck. It's what keeps us paralyzed in where we are, both mentally and emotionally and sometimes even spiritually. What was it like for you to embrace that early in your life, the importance of not letting things steal your happiness?
Yeah, it's such an important thing that I've been fortunate to be good at, which is to be able to let things go. Even my wife says that when bad things happen or unjust things happen in my life to me or to people close to me, I certainly don't just say, oh, everything's fine. I certainly fight against those things. But eventually, if you don't let them go, they control and take, you know, they take control of your life, and they're always hanging over you and they're always bothering you, and they just make your life less. They make you unable to move forward as easily. And it's a way of creating happiness for yourself to be able to let those things go. So, yeah, my father was, you know, a very difficult guy. He was an alcoholic. But in addition to being an alcoholic, he was just a very mean person who I think, you know, didn't like how his life turned out, didn't like his life at all, and took it out on his family and on my mother, as anyone reading the book will see. And yeah, just, you know, not having that drag me down. There's several instances where I have episodes with my father. The one that pops to mind too is the one where, you know, he stops me from leaving the room one day in the kitchen, standing in front of me. And by then I'm this big high school football player, and, or becoming that, and I'm taller than he is. And we have a minor physical confrontation. And it's sort of an important moment in the book because it represents a little bit of a changing of the guard. You know, before that, he's all powerful and can do what he wants and be as mean as he wants. But now he's no longer completely the man of the house anymore, right? There are other men, me and my older brother, who's a year older, were, you know, coming of age, and we were starting to lessen his ability to be completely in charge and to be just endlessly mean. And I think the second half of the family has a little bit of a better time of it, because even though he was still very difficult, he was less than he was before. He was older, he was weaker, but he was also in a household now with other men.
Yeah. It is a, it's a powerful read, Tom, and it really allows us to get to know you. But also what I think is so interesting, and I hope our audience picks up on this too, is that it is your story, but it's also our story. It's a story of so many people, you know, who have not had the best of circumstances, not been defined by it, and been able to come out better on the other side. So I want to ask you, what is your hope when people pick up Animals I Want to See? What do you hope it does for them?
Well, a couple things I'd say. One of them is the whole kindness thing. You know, when the guy across the street, Mr. Noble, takes, you know, three of us little boys fishing, he's not thinking that this act of kindness is necessarily going to change our lives. You know, it's a great scene. But when you add up all these small acts of kindness like that, you never know which one is going to sort of put somebody, you know, over the dam, and it's going to break through something. And so I would encourage everyone to do an act of kindness for a stranger every day. It's a fantastic discipline, which I've adopted. I didn't invent it, right? But it's a, I like it. And it also makes you a happier person to do this. And the second thing I would say, referring back to how you said so many people find themselves in difficult situations, I can only say what happened to me and what worked for me. You know, what helped me in my hardest times was my belief that I could change my ending, you know? When, and this is me talking to myself, not necessarily giving advice, but when you feel, you know, you're stuck in a helpless situation, you know, you're not helpless. You know, it's the main hope you have. You have, you can tell yourself a story. I think we believe the stories we tell ourselves. And are you telling yourself you're helpless, or are you telling yourself you have a chance? You know, it all goes back to hope. And when you have a chance, you know, you start to take action, you start to try to create a plan. As you'll see in the book, I had some dark times, some bad things that happened, and I was able to overcome those. And I know not everybody has exactly my abilities or my situation or whatever, and some things are impossible to overcome. But that's what worked for me.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's a great read. I really enjoyed the book, Tom, and enjoyed our conversation with you as well. Again, everyone, Tom Seaman has been our guest. Animals I Want to See is the book, a memoir of growing up in the projects and defying the odds. It is available through our friends at Amazon.com or through your favorite bookstore. If they don't have it, I know they'd be more than happy to order it for you. It's published by Post Hill Press. And Tom, what about for yourself? How can our audience stay connected with you?
Yeah, I mean, I have an author website, which is tomseamanauthor.com. You could learn more there. And I just hope people order the book. As you said, it's available on all the sites that sell books, even Walmart and Target, and available at all independent bookstores, which I love to support. And the one last thing I would say is bookshop.org is a nonprofit that sells books and shares revenues with local bookstores. So bookshop.org is a great place to get the book as well.
All right. Well, Tom, thank you again for the time today. I really appreciate you stopping by, and looking forward to our next chat together.
For having me. It's been great.
I appreciate that. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. For those joining us on the radio side, we have more Conversations Live coming up at the bottom of the hour. For those tuning in online, we appreciate you all being with us. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Let us go make today amazing. Take care.